welcome to the Mac Show. Yes, we're here to discuss the week in Apple, all the things that have gone, all the fun stuff. And we've got a special guest this year. Do something rather special a bit later on, which is pretty awesome, I have to say. I'm quite impressed with it. And I've only seen it not working properly for 2 minutes. And that impressed me. Joining me to discuss the week in Apple, we have got Andy Anatko coming, by the way, but he's stuck in a gale at the moment. So he went into a coffee shop to set up, ready to do the show in the coffee shop, and the power went out. So you're getting a message there, mate. Don't go out in a strong wind. God hates you. Joining me, top left, starting us off, it's not Dot Rock, it's not that line, it's not that line, it's not that line, it's that line. Hello, Chris Campion. How the devil are you, mate?
I'm really good.
What's been going off in Yorkshire?
We've had sun in Yorkshire this week. We've had sun in Yorkshire, we've had a little bit of snow.
I thought it was God's country.
Well, it is. It's giving it a little bit of everything.
Excellent, mate.
Yeah, so busy week, looking forward to a week off end of next week now. So okay. I'll wrap up at work, everything done, ready for a week off.
And you're on call, aren't you, tonight? So being a bit
I'm on call, so yeah, fingers crossed I won't get anything. If I do, I need to go on mute for 30 seconds to ask them to ring me back in 2 hours.
Can I have a job at your place? Yeah, I'm doing something. Piss off. next to him, Doc, underneath him actually, because we've... how you doing, mate? How's the audio interface?
Old school. no, it's always a pleasure being underneath Chris Campion.
Yeah, too right. We've discovered that line 2 at the BTN studio doesn't like Doc for some reason. It's horrible and clippy and nasty, and now he's gone on to line 3 at work, so... Gonna have to do a permanent line change before we get a charge against us.
So I mean, the ligne de trois.
And joining us in the studio, and this is kind of cool. We got Muller as usual, which isn't the cool bit. But we've also got Paul Kirkle, the iPad artist, who is going to do a bit of a Len Peralta tonight, and he's doing a bit of sketching away on his iPad at the moment. But he's also got a really super cool thing. I mean, this thing really is super cool, and we're going to demo it later. But we've got to switch the lights off to do it, because otherwise you won't see it. And so we're going to have to figure out how to go about that a bit later on. We have got an extension cable for the USB, which we should have thought about and plugged in before we did. Never thought about that. We'll have to work. This may or may not work. We'll see how it goes. We've had some emails. First of all, thank you. Tom VF has sent an email. You remember last week I was saying about getting 5 brand new Mac Minis, and then we could do the Skype wall properly, and it'd be super swing, and we'd have loads of, we'd have no problem with lip sync and all that kind of stuff. Tom has taken it upon himself. This is Tom that wrote the email, or that wrote the review, that he thought I said that he didn't like it, but actually he does like it. It just, he put something that was balanced, and he's been on the last 2 weeks with this thing anyway. Tom has written in, he said, "Hi Ewan, I heard your comment about on Sensible Discussion Big Show about a few new Mac Minis for the network. Although I can't fork over the money to buy one for you all by myself, we're not overflowing with money in Silicon Valley, contrary to popular belief. I'd like to donate $100 to your cause." Thank you, Tom. That's incredibly kind. So he's done it via PayPal, although he hasn't got a PayPal account. He's had to create one to give us $100, but thanks, mate. I'll turn off the $2 per month Patreon, because I think that's fairly a fair swap. I'll challenge every other Big Show and Mac Show listener, especially those in the US, to match all or part of my Mac Mini Fund donation. Thanks, mate. And he said, a special recognition to those who donate, say over $25 to the cause. Can you scribble your name on the Mini somewhere with an indelible marker? And I thought about this, and I've got a firm that make vinyl covers for me for stuff, and vinyl signs that go up in customers when they want one of my pictures up there. And I thought, they're going to make me a cover. And what we'll do is, if you donate for the Mac Mini Fund greater than $25, you will get your signature, and you can send a signature and a message in, and we'll get it put on vinyl, and we'll get it stuck to the top of the Mac Mini that you contributed to, and those Mac Minis then will have your permanent mark on them, if you like, in inverted commas, to show that you donated to do them. So there you go, the Mac Mini Fund has been started. Thank you, Tom. $100 has been deposited. It's very kind of you, mate. And when we get enough money, we'll buy a new Mac Mini each time and see where we go from there. So thank you, Tom. Wow. Incredibly kind, and a wonderful, wonderful start to the fund.
Let me hit up my Light Painters Network, because that would look super, super good engraved, and it's just too far for me. But yeah, we have a large network. As a matter of fact, part of my equipment actually comes from Bath. Is that right?
All right. Okay. Yeah, I'm in Bath on Saturday. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I'd say there got to be some boys that's in the network that's over there, and we all call on each other for favors when we're doing things. And then, so let me see if I can find somebody out that side that's in my laser network and see if we can get them to burn it up.
That would be awesome.
That would be super dope.
It would completely fuck my warranty, but that would be awesome.
Nah. It's only a case thing. That doesn't bother warranty. It's no different than Colorware PC painting them.
Now, if we could get a little plate done or something, that'd be even easier. Well, if you could do the plates and then ship them over. They wouldn't weigh much.
Yeah, no, I totally.
Do them on some acetate. And then you can see the Apple logo through it, and all the things will be on it, and the acetate won't weigh hardly anything.
Yeah, I can do it in clear acrylic. Is that you guys call it Perspex, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yep. Acrylic's good. Yep. We'll do that. That's even better.
Big right.
Yeah, we'll do with that. We'll get all the signatures together, and I'll send the artwork over, and Doc will do it, and we'll put them on the Mac Minis, and you will be permanently on the Mac Minis. There you go. That's a great solution.
And you know, you're an because the Mac Minis are so light and so cool, I can probably rig you up something with the acetate so you can kind of mount them as, like, you know, tic-tac-toes on the wall or whatever, as cables down. That's how we had in the Genius Room in the Apple Store.
That would be cool, actually, because I've got wall space here that I could use for that. Spot on.
At every technician's desk, we had the computer basically mounted underneath the shelf with this little Perspex bracket. And then all the wires kind of hid. So you come in, you don't see any wires or not, but all the minis were very to get at.
That would be
and they
pretty
did
cool.
a little thing to bring one port to the front.
I think I've got wood. Yeah. That seriously does good. The Apple news, the big news in Apple, the big stories that have happened in Apple in through the week. Are you ready for this? Nintendo have released their first iOS game. Yes, you all cheer. And then you go, oh, what? Because it's Miitomo. And you go, who?
Yep.
What?
Yeah, they got Mario in there batting. He's the switch hitter that hits home runs every week, and they released Miitomo as their first iOS game. They have a back catalogue that would make them billions in the App Store. And I'm not joking, probably billions of dollars in the App Store. And this is what they release. I'd like to say disgust, but, bearing in mind we try to be a family show.
We've said a few times, I can't remember on this show or the big show, that the one thing to boost Nintendo straight back into everybody's eyeline, back into every teenager's eyeline who probably only played Nintendo games on the Wii or the Wii U, is get Mario, get Zelda, get games like that straight into iOS. It's in front of everybody quickly. You shove those games in the App Store at $2.99, $3.99, even $4.99 each, and they are going to sell.
No question. They'll fly off.
Oh my God, this is crazy. Well, the funny thing about it is, okay, so the me part is them kind of stretching the myself versus the we, right? And Tomo is Japanese for Tomodachi, so I get where the Tomo part comes from. But, like, it's literally just a chat game for you and your friends. Is that the gist of it?
It just looks like a crap game, yeah. I mean, there's no... I mean, it's got the Wiimo characters. Oh, Jesus Christ, Kirkle started. This is... I really do. I'm impressed with people who've got a talent like this, because it is incredible. But so Kirkle's been drawing for, like, 10 minutes, and he's already got a picture of me swilling back a Guinness.
Hey, is that...
Oh, the freaking... The fudging cameras. I'm so stupid. This is the level of my stupidity knows no bounds. Is the camera coming back on or not?
I don't know. Only when I walk up to change it, it's
gone
back on.
It's not coming back on. Just give be careful not to move it, but it's turn it back on. Yeah, just it's on. There you go. As soon as you touch it, see my look, it comes on. The bit of the screen went black just in front where the camera shoots me, and I've cropped it, and I went to move this out to the side because I thought I could show around it. What an idiot. But there you go. That's Mr. Kirkle's immediate representation of what it's like on a Thursday night in the BTN studio with me swilling back Guinness. Thank you, Paul.
This is dope. Hey, Paul, are you Kirkle at Webley.com?
Yeah.
I found it. Man, my Google Foo is...
I want to cut to Paul on this as well, as because, Paul, you used to work in game development, and, I mean, you've got you're at the Jazzy Show this week. If you want to see Paul and his fantastic artwork and the students that he's got who draw very good artwork at Guildford College.
Yep, that's right.
They're at the Gadget Show this week, so be sure to look them up. I'm going to post this show tomorrow, so people should hear it before they get to the Gadget Show. But Paul, I mean, you used to work in game development, game artwork, and this has got to be a lunatic move from Nintendo.
Well, it sort of is, and it sort of isn't. I mean, when you think about Nintendo, you think about the control interfaces. So you think about the GameCube controller or the Wiimote or whatever. Yeah. So actually, Nintendo have always been really good at pairing the game to the interface. And you don't get that so much with a phone. So I totally agree.
But, I mean, surely Mario would just sell buckets.
Yeah, but it would. But would it sell if it was a bad Mario game?
All they've got to do is they've got to put Mario from the Super Nintendo or Super SNES or something like that on, and that's it.
Touchscreen games are more hunt and peck, and they're like, you know, tap screen and whatever. And when you get games that are more joypad orientated, they're quite hard to play. I mean, I love Geometry Wars loads, but I don't like it on touchscreen.
Sorry, Paul. What about something like Mario Kart, playing it on phone in landscape mode? So you're using the phone almost like the
tilt,
like the steering wheel, with the tilt, and then push that up and step into Apple TV.
Yeah, I mean, I agree, but I think they're missing out on the thing that is the perfect in-app purchase Nintendo game, full stop, which is Animal Crossing, which would just knock it out of the park on a touchscreen, because there is nothing in there that needs any sort of interface per se. And they're already doing Animal Crossing Happy Home Designer, where you have to buy cards to get the furniture and get things. So I think that'd be a fabulous download iOS game.
Unbelievable. Yeah, I mean, I just think, you know, that you've got... I think the thing is as well, though, Paul, is it's not... and everyone, is it the thing that Nintendo have got that they can take to the bank is the names.
Yeah.
Mario Brothers is just like... That's like, oh, I'll buy it. Before you even hear what the rest of it is. And you look at Mario Galaxy, and I mean, I thought that was a pile of shit.
Oh, no, it's lovely. No, I thought, love Mario Galaxy.
But it's got Mario on it, and it sells. And you put Zelda on it, and it sells. And, you know, all of those games have got real marketability just because of the character names and nothing else. Moshi's Adventures or something like that, and it'll sell by the bucket load, because there's so many of us 40-year-olds out there who remember the heyday of Nintendo and have got devices that we want to show to our kids and go, Dad was playing this when he was a kid. And I'd love my kid to come up. I mean, my kid comes up now and he whistles tunes to me. And I'm like, I finish off the line singing it. And he goes, how do you know that? And I go, because it's some idiot that sampled it now, son. It's not new. And I'd love him to come up and go, oh, this new game, it's really cool, look on the phone. And look, it's like this little plumber kid. And you're like, it's Mario, dude.
Yeah. Actually, you know, because I teach creative media, so one of the courses I teach is computer games, and I do all the 3D and the digital graphics parts of that. And the best thing is, when you get a new class in, and you leave it a couple of weeks, and then you say the Mario joke, because it just gets them for the rest of the day, and you go like, what are Mario's dungarees made out of? He'll go, don't know. Denim. Just humming it for the rest of the class, it's fab.
Denim.
Yeah.
Very good. I heard that joke before, actually. That's going to piss me off all through the night.
I never heard that before either, but it's on.
Yeah, no, I just... you can't... whoever's in charge of Mario... What the fudge are you doing? Jesus Christ. iOS... Deepan in the chat room, we've got to put the links in for the stories. Deepan says, do you really want to do a story about how stable 9.3 is when 9.3.1's just been released? And he has a fair point there. But there's been some bench tests that says that 9.3 is easily the most stable iOS in recent memory. Supposedly. I found it good, I have to say. I found it extremely good. I found the latency or the drop-off on legacy of old applications is less. There's less older games that aren't working on my phone, if you know what I mean. I haven't found any old games that don't work anymore or anything like that. It does feel a lot more stable in the hand, and I don't get the problems where You know, when you did a double button press to get rid of, like, it wouldn't find your signal or something like that on your phone, and it says, you go through a tunnel on the train and it just says no signal because you're going through the tunnel. Okay, fair enough. But then when you come out the other side, it just takes forever to try and find a signal. And I used to have to do a double button repress to get it to come back again. And I don't get that anymore. It gets the signal back again instantly. Anyone?
I think. You know what? Go ahead.
No, it's one of you, for Christ's sake.
Yeah, go ahead, all thanks.
Right. All right, so...
That's very British of you,
Doc. Three things for me since upgrading that I found I quite like about 9.3. First thing is battery life. Don't know whether it's purely perception thing, but I feel on my iPhone 6 that I'm getting better battery life on that. I'm certainly getting through to the end of the day. Previously, I was on about 42-45%, pretty much consistently when I got in the car and plugged it into the charger on the drive home. I'm finding that sort of mid-50s now, so I think I'm seeing something better in terms of battery in the iPhone 6. Notes synchronization, I'm finding way more reliable. I had a definite issue previously where I'd see something, a link to the show might have been reading an article thinking, right, I'm gonna maybe use that as my pick tonight on the big show, and I just flick it up into a note, so when I got home on the Mac, load notes, it'll be there. I had loads of sync issues on notes, and I'm finding that really reliable now across iPads and across Mac. And the third point, I'm seeing a benefit, so I'm probably one of the few people out there who doesn't actually mind news, Apple News, and I'm finding that that's slick now. The updates are very, very fast on there. The movement around the app is very slick now. It's not stuttery like it was before. It doesn't really hang like it did before. So, yeah, so far for me, I'd agree. 9.3 is pretty stable and seems to have improved sort of my experience on those three areas.
Yeah, I get better photo syncing, definitely, and it's quicker. Doc, what were you saying?
The one thing that used to really, really drive me insane about it was, like, every once in a while, like you were saying, when you have a signal situation where the LTE or the Wi-Fi was, like, you know, trying to grab another connection or whatever, it would make it so that things on the phone were unpressable. And you might be doing something that's not even sort of network related, but because the thing is thinking so hard, it would kind of eat the system for a minute. And that's gone away completely. I have noticed that my battery is a lot better, like Cam said. And honestly, the only reason why there's a new update is for the people that had older phones that were having that install problem. Which, you know, you would hope is something that they would catch, but, you know, I don't know. That one's kind of tough. I always say, whenever you're trying to squeeze a new OS into, like, the older device, that's always a problem. And, you know, people want, you know, you're holding an iPhone 4. It was the primary problem, right? iPhone 4 and, was it 4S? And I was like, yeah, at some point, like, they can't leave the window open but so long. In order for progress to happen, you got to close it, so... I always feel bad for these people when it happens, but at the same token, I don't feel bad when it's like my friend Brian, who has an iPhone 4 just because he's cheap ass, not because he can't buy one. Yeah. You know, I'm like, bro, you're hurting yourself. You're not helping yourself by keeping the old phone. So we kind of helped him smash it the other day so he can get a new phone.
Nice. That's like, that's what wives tend to do to get a new phone out of their husbands, isn't it?
Drop it down the toilet. Me and my friends decided to take it at matters of old hands and accidentally knock it out of his hand. And then we gave him our 5S so that he at least move up.
That's what, closer. Now, that's what you call a friend.
Yeah.
Someone who gets you a fake insurance claim so that you can get a new phone.
No, we just gave him our old iPhone 5S. But
why don't you just save the old phone and give him your new one? Your old phone, then. I don't get why you need the elaborate plan. It's like...
Because he wouldn't take it.
No, that's like a cartoon hero villain monologuing so that he gives time to the superhero to beat him. You know, why go to all that? Come on, Dr. Evil, tell us.
It was just kind of funny that, you know, going back to the stableness.
The subject, yeah.
It's only going to keep getting better, and I really appreciate the amount of updates and stuff that they've been coming and how much they're still working on making it better, no matter how many people complain. And there's always going to be issues when there's damn near a billion devices out there. So, but I love it when the people just make like, oh my God, the world's going to end because these iPhone 4s are crashing when you try to stuff in a new iOS.
Yeah, no. I think it's pretty good. I'm really chuffed with it and I've had no problems whatsoever. Paul, you upgraded?
No.
See, I mean, it's a bit different for you, isn't it? Because you, I mean, you've got a lot of the iPad drawing applications you rely on quite heavily. So,
yeah, it kills them.
You know, a bit of a, sometimes it can, I guess, but I haven't had an application drop, I have to say.
To be honest, I think it's better now than it has been, but there's been some dodgy updates and there's been some times when I just don't trust it. And if
no,
I'm
I
coming
get
up
that.
To a show,
totally
I saw the update come up a couple of days ago and I thought there is no way before a show I'm going to update just in case.
Yeah.
And it's just a lack of faith in Apple.
I wouldn't do it the night before a show. I want to have an option to roll back, you know, with a day's notice.
But for all intents and purposes, if you weren't one of the people having that, you know, cloud allowing you back into your iCloud situation, there probably is no real reason to move to 9.3.1 when it comes out, other than just to be updated. So just do it at your leisure, you know, because I don't think they added anything else other than to fix that issue.
Yeah, I mean, I'll get the gadget show out of the way, for Christ's sake, but I still think, yeah, I think you'll be fine.
Which update is it that's going to have the nightlight and the education stuff?
9.3.
That's now. Yeah. That is very helpful, by the way.
Yeah, I've got to admit, I know there's a lot of talk about Night Shift before, and I'm quite liking it. I read quite a lot on either iBooks or on the Kindle app on my iPad Mini in bed, and I'm certainly finding that the Night Shift is beneficial for me.
It only pisses me off when I'm out late at night standing in a parking lot eating food on a stick and I want to take pictures. I don't know how the coloration of the pictures is going to be tomorrow when I look at it. That kind of bothers me, but other than that, you know, no big deal.
Yeah, because a big part of your life is taking pictures of roasting meat and beer.
Mm.
Yeah.
And that's what I was saying. Like, the only pictures that are going to be off-colored are pictures of food and beer that late at night anyway.
Yeah. You're not going
to... Or D-pics, which you probably shouldn't be taking.
This is hot off the press, right? Big news. I had an email from Alex McQuilkin a couple of weeks ago, or last year actually, saying he was over in London, would he like to meet up? And I was like, I couldn't get there in time and I couldn't meet up with Alex, so I apologise for that, Alex. But he's planned ahead and he's coming to the UK in April and he's booked. This is brilliant. He's booked himself to come up to Birmingham. He's going to have the pre-show curry with me and Muller. Then he's going to come and do the shows, and he's booked the hotel over there. This guy's come all the way from the far side of the planet for this. There you go. That is how good the curry at the Kismet is.
Are you
Alex,
rubbing it in?
If you're listening, I hope you're listening. Alex McQuilkin, if you're listening, you're welcome, mate. It's going to be a hell of a night. Don't expect to drive the following day, however. Apple, I think this is a massive story. I think the subtext of this is huge. Apple will provide the Major League Baseball teams with iPad Pro. Sorry, boys, I'm doing a show here, if you don't mind. The iPad Pros for dugout use. Apple and Major League Baseball have agreed a deal that will see the sports league coaching staff use the iPad Pro in dugouts to make better use of data during games. Any comments to start us off? Because I know what I think here. And I think... I think this is an answer to the Surface being on NFL, and I think I think they're really twitchy because I don't think they, I think the iPad, I think the sales for iPad have you know, they need a little shove, they need a little come on guys, back you go, and because we've been saying for a while now that iPad, you know, there's a lot of things that Apple have done that have clearly shown that iPad is slowing down in its sales because people have got very good units that will last the test of time, and the fact that the obsolescence of old programs in 9.3 is another thing that makes it even worse. But I think Apple are really keen to raise the profile of the iPad at the moment.
You know what's funny is I try to remember the story. I have it somewhere. I'm looking at it real quick. There was a couple of NFL teams who had the blue Surface cases leaned up on their lap, and then right in front of it there's the iPad because they didn't like working on the Surface. And I don't know if you remember this, way back in the very beginning of iPad, Tampa Bay Buccaneers and like one other team went all iPad. Like they were the first to dive in full-fledged. And, you know, I think NFL force-feeding the Surface in, a lot of guys didn't like it. A lot of guys didn't take to it. I mean, you always see Peyton Manning playing with it, but you really don't know what he's doing. He's probably just going, damn, my legs hurt. I can't wait to retire, which, thank you, he did.
Yeah,
I think it's a great story.
Behind Peyton Manning's, he's got a SNES, and he's playing Super Nintendo Mario Kart or something like that, you know, Mario Brothers. Any thoughts, Chris? I thought this was iPad sales needing a real lunge.
I think it's absolutely advertising and PR at its finest, this one. Totally see the benefit of having technology at the side of the field. You got all the real-time decisions and statistics at the fingertips rather than them using ring binders and tactic cards and everything like that they've got. But, yeah, I totally agree with you. I think the Surface in NFL and the pick that Doc mentioned about the Surface backplate against an iPad during one of the games. And I don't know if we mentioned that.
We did. Would it happen because we were laughing at it?
And it would not have surprised me in the slightest had Apple not leaked a picture like that. It was in the run-up to the Super Bowl or something like that.
I totally forget. But, you know, NFL paid $400 million in order to get those surfaces on the sideline. I'm like, have they even sold $400 million worth of surfaces?
Is the reports right that Apple are giving these to all of the major league teams? It's a contract, isn't it, over a number of years?
Yeah, I didn't read this story, so I don't know if that happened. But even if they did, it didn't cost them $400 million.
I'm sure it's... hang on a minute. There it is. Apple struck a multi-year partnership with Major League Baseball to equip every coach in the league with a 12.9-inch iPad Pro, according to Wall Street Journal.
You know, what's funny is when NFL first took the surfaces, I want to call it the beginning of the season 2015, or maybe 2014 rather.
2014.
Every coach and every player, when asked by a reporter, would go, oh yeah, man, having the iPads on the sidelines is awesome. We can review plays and blah, blah, blah. And so NFL, yeah. I mean, Microsoft sent out a press release to the office telling Roger, hey, tell your boys to quit calling the Surface's iPad.
Yeah, I know there was a bit of a problem with that. And it's like the Beats thing, isn't it? We have people wearing Beats when they're getting paid by someone else to wear and they're putting tape over the stuff and that kind of thing. But I can't see that there's anyone in the Major League Baseball dugouts that are going to be sat there with their iPad Pro in front of them, but they've got a Surface behind it because they rely on the Surface more.
If you guys ever want to hear a really, really great story, it's a couple of years old on Freakonomics, and it's about why we don't have, like, you know, Samsung on the front of the Colts the way you have them in front of Chelsea. Like, it totally matches, and the colors would match. And at this time, Peyton was still at Samsung. I mean, was still at the Colts. And one of the topics were, you know, the players are individually sponsored more so than the teams. And then so it would be a huge conflict because, if you remember, Peyton Manning was and still is a spokesperson for Sony. And what I thought was funny about that, you know, that whole show and the whole conversation is really great. Thing on Freakonomics, you can look it up, is that I remember when, like, you know, Nani and was playing at Man U, he was like one of their biggest spokesmen for Adidas, but Man U has always been a Nike team and nobody really cared. Like, they do it all the time. And it's trippy to me how in the UK that happens and no one screams, no one complains, no one argues. But over here, like, they get into such a hissy fit over stuff that kind of sort of doesn't matter. You know, if your brand is good, people are going to buy it. It doesn't matter whether, you know, X person or not.
But I think from a marketing point of view, you know, getting in front of faces, getting it in the Major League, getting it in the NBA, getting iPads in the Premier League, with the global reach that those franchises have got, you're just getting the Apple logo out there.
It's a reminder more than anything else.
I think it's quite interesting as well, because if you look at traditionally, the Apple logo has never been put out by Apple. So all the times that you see people sat down with their computer in a movie and then they close the laptop and they talk to someone, if it's an IBM, it's been paid for. If it's anything that shows any kind of Microsoft-esque computer, it's been paid for as product placement. If it's an Apple have never paid for any of that kind of stuff. It's, you know, the movie industry is doing it because they know that Apple is cool-esque. And I think it's interesting, I suppose. I think it's interesting that this is the first time they're looking for a very much a product placement. And I'm not saying it's alarm bells, but I think they're more they're more astute of the fact that, that there is a PR game to win out there.
I was going to say something, Paul. Draw yourself a mute button.
Show me what?
Yeah, if you're an artist, draw yourself a mute button.
I just had to say that.
No, that's cool. That's cool.
Actually, sorry, can I say something?
It's funny when people put the tape on the logo, like in the movies, like we don't know what it is. And I'm like, when you do that, you actually attract more attention than if you left it alone. If you left it alone, people would probably ignore it because they see it so often.
Yeah,
you absolutely have that sort of ambient awareness. But when they tape the thing, or like in the cooking shows where they try to tape up the Heinz tomatoes, or you know, the P&G tips or whatever, so I'm like, we know what it is, stupid. Don't, you're not helping. I say that about when ladies tie a sweater on their hips. I really do believe it makes men look more. You're not hiding the butt, you're making us look at it more. We want to know what you're hiding.
Just before I come to Paul, Bowen says, oh, have you seen the Captain America movie? There's a whole scene in an Apple store, but I guarantee you Apple didn't pay for that. That's the point. It might be, but Apple never paid for that. I guarantee you they didn't.
And I think...
Paul do his point, dude, and then we'll come back. Go on, Paul.
No, all I was going to say was I've done, like, this is the fifth year of doing events at the college, and we've done some fairly meaty events. We've done, like, the Gadget Show, Eurogamer Expo, and BET, which is a really huge technology trade show. And Apple, whenever I've communicated with them, have basically said, oh, that's very nice, and that's it. They have never, ever supported anything that we've done. You know, even when it's just down to, well, look, can you lend me 5 iPads? Because I can't, you know, we've got like 120 square meters of space. I just haven't got enough machines. And then this year is the first year they've ever got in touch with me and said, do you want to work together? Do you want to borrow some devices and do something? And I thought that was interesting. In as much as up until now they've been really reticent to do anything in a partnership with what we've been doing. We've done some
that's quite telling,
big things.
Yeah.
So we took the when the Hockney exhibition was on at the Royal Academy, for example, they got me and the students in to teach their staff how to use Brushes app on the iPad, so that their staff could then talk to the people in the exhibition and explain how Hockney had done what he'd done. And it was fab, and it was really brilliant. I said I'd do it for free if the kids got to go to the exhibition before it started and all that sort of jazz, and they were fine with it. But again, you know, I've mentioned it to the two Apple stores in London, and there was just no interest in you know, it was like, you know, okay, that's nice, thanks.
That's weird.
Whereas with other companies,
in the States, you're very, very open about devices for events and stuff like that through the users group liaison. So that's weird. It probably is just the person that was manning that desk at that time, because that's definitely not company policy. And I work.
Have you, Paul? Have you not gone to the Regent Street store or anything like that and done a demo? Because they would eat that up if you did a live demo like you did at Elmug.
Actually, I think I've done demos in both of them. I've definitely done it at the Regent Street store. Yeah, no, I've done it in both of them, and it was fine. It was
such a busy life.
Yeah, no. It was lovely, and the staff were brilliant. But every time Apple come out with a new device, if I've got time, I'll go to a London store and test out the device, because it's fun, and you start talking to the staff, and they're always really interested, and you chat. So I still remember the iPad Pro came out, and the day it came out, I was up in London because I was working for another tech company. So I went there early in the morning, played on the iPad Pro, and they had one pencil in the store. And they had to rip it out of a staff member's hand to bring it over to me to play with, because they wanted me to draw with the pencil.
Yeah.
And I was drawing away on the iPad Pro, and I could hear the staff members going, and as you can see on this one, the artist is drawing this, that, and the other. So they were using me as a sales pitch.
Yeah.
And sort of like, as if I had come in and they'd organised.
Did you put a hat down so you could get a few coins chipped
in?
Yeah.
Then I would have been out and no pencil. So I did that, and they were fine. And they, you know, a number of staff members said, look, don't worry, you know, we're really interested in what you're doing. Can we take your number? Can we take your email address? And we'll get back to you. And I said, look, to be honest, I've done this dance a lot of times. I've always given you my email address because I would like to get my students into more places. And it's really cool when they get on the stand and the stage. And I'm well up for it. But if I do it,
it's
9 times out
though.
Of 10, I get sales pitches. I get people phoning me up and saying, well, how many iPads do you want to buy for your college? And I'm at a not particularly rich college. I have no budget. If I'm lucky, I'll get 2 new iPads per year. But when we did the Regent Street store, I took about 20 students up there. 5 of them spoke on stage. One of them was a brilliant and fabulous autistic artist called Alice. And we'd prepped her and we'd worked with her and we had an LSA, with a support assistant with her. And we were doing really, really well until we got to the staircase. And she completely freaked out on the glass staircase.
Oh, Christ.
Got up on the stage and she was a bag of nerves and she was swearing her face off until I gave her the microphone.
And thankfully then, she changed her mind.
No, and then she carried on swearing her face off. But I had said to the audience, look, this is Alice, she's brilliant. She is autistic. She's a special needs school, but she draws brilliantly on an iPad. And she did everyone proud. She was really, really good. And she excellent. Completely engaged with the crowd.
Well done, Alice.
But with more swear words than I think they were expecting.
That's awesome. Do you know David Sperry?
Who?
David Sperry, the owner of Adani.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, I can probably hook you up with him. You could talk to him and probably help you out because he's got a lot of connections. He's a super nice guy.
Go for it.
Cool.
Typical, isn't it? We're sitting talking high, you know, cutting edge technology for Apple, and Campion posts in the chat room, Ockney's a fellow Yorkshireman.
And the guys from Olaclip are both where are they from? They're from Leeds or something, I can't remember.
You're like the father from my big fat Greek wedding. Yeah?
He's like the Indian, isn't he?
And people who are not from Yorkshire, they want to be from Yorkshire.
Yeah, he's from God's country, right?
That's Sachin Tendulkar, he was Yorkshire.
He was invented in Yorkshire. Who invented Sachin Tendulkar? Yorkshire.
Sachin
Tendulkar
wants to be from Yorkshire.
We can't get away from it. We've put it off for long enough. iPhone, FBI, shiz. So Apple said no, bollocks, and then FBI said, Apple, and they didn't do it. And then someone allegedly in Israel, still not confirmed, said that they'd open it for them. And then now they've officially dropped the case this week. It's gone completely from the books. There is no more requirement for Apple to do anything whatsoever. And I think there's a bit of egg on Apple's face, because the other thing that's happened as well is that the FBI haven't told Apple what they've done to get into the phone. So maybe Apple aren't bothered, I don't know, but... I don't think this looks good. I really don't think this looks good for Apple.
Do we know for definite that they've absolutely unlocked it? Has there been any evidence released to say it is?
Well, they've dropped the case. I mean, why would you drop the case otherwise? Because you'd still want to press the point with Apple. I mean, okay. So your thought process, I'm guessing there, Chris, is the fact that no, I knew. All right, steady on. You're from Yorkshire. Why would I forget? The thought process there, Chris, is the fact that you're sitting thinking, oh, FBI have sat and thought, looked at the All Writs Act finally and gone, do you know what, I think we're on shaky ground here. I tell you what, let's just duck out quietly and walk away. But the FBI have offered to open another phone for a case in Arizona, haven't they? Or
the
homicide case, yeah. So I think there's a Doc's on the phone. but otherwise he'd be raging at this point. But I think I think this is a problem for Apple here. I think they haven't looked at... I thought they looked bad during the fight, and now I think they look even worse.
And I think the fact that Apple... if this has all been unlocked, Apple have probably sat there scratching themselves, thinking, what have they done? How have they got into it? What is the exploit? We now need to try and patch an exploit, but we don't know what it is.
Yeah.
And is there any requirement to that we know of for the FBI to share how they've got in?
Of course not.
There's no requirement, no. I mean, if you're talking about breaching the license agreement that Apple had that says you shouldn't hack the phone, because I think that's what they effectively did was... And the thing is as well, are they going to patch 8 on a 5C? Because I can't see them bothering to issue a patch for that. If you've got an 8 on a 5C, then it is what it is, isn't it?
I've heard on a podcast I've been listening to this week. I'm trying to think which podcast it was. I can't for the life of me remember. But I seem to think it was either Jeff or Adam who may have said something about Obama passed law in the US. I don't know if Doc's listening yet. Obama passed law in the US that the US government and its agencies need to share with a hard provider if a zero-day exploit is identified. I don't know if this falls into that sort of area or not.
Well, I don't know.
They've got to prove it first.
I mean, there's no details of how they've actually got into the phone. I mean, there's people that have said, right, if there's three ways they can get into this phone. Here's the three ways they can get into this phone. That's the only way. I know Snowden tweeted that out. But there's no confirmation that they've got in. Good point. But I think they probably have. And there's no confirmation that of the way in which they got in at all anyway. So I can't see them being friendly with Apple after all of this, surely.
Yeah. No, I totally agree. And I think the other case, like you mentioned a case there about, was it the murder in Arkansas?
Yeah.
I think that then brings into, plays into the hands of the concerns that were stirred up right at the start of this whole scenario about this just then essentially opening floodgates. And I know that you very strongly at the point were very clear there that this is like the 174 iPhones, that's 174 court cases,
yeah, exactly.
174 judges. But I don't see anything in the FBI story around a judge committing or asking the FBI to use the route that they've clearly broken into this iPhone.
They don't need it.
So no court case. I think if FBI have got a route in,
The phone is evidence. And they can do whatever they like to get into that evidence because they can't. There's no defense attorney here that's going to question how they got into it. So they can do whatever they like to get into it to find the evidence that they want from it. That was always going to be the issue. That was always going to be the problem with Apple. They've not gone against anything in terms of the court order or anything else that's taken place. So. I can't say they've done nothing wrong here. It's in their possession. They can try and brute force it open. It's like if they had a box with a padlock on it, they could cut the padlock off it to go in and have a look at it. So it's no different as an analogy in that sense.
I think it was fairly played down quite early on here. There's a 5C on the version of iOS that it was on. It's there. It doesn't have the same levels of protection. I'm just wondering if the Arkansas case, is that a 5C with iOS 7, I think.
There's no details. I think it's just like people jumping on the bandwagon of this has happened, so oh look, it's happening again.
Yeah. So I think what's going to be really interesting when more details of the Arkansas case comes out is it a 5C or is it something like a 5S or a 6 where we've got the secure enclave and then there's the ask coming of the FBI to try and use the same method to crack these phones.
So that's quite interesting because I there's another bit of me. Have you seen the father asks Apple to open dead son's iPhone?
I'm just looking at that right now.
Yeah, so this is a case of an Italian chap, a grieving father has asked Tim Cook to help him unblock his son's dead son's iPhone so he can retrieve the photographs that are stored on it. And if the US tech giant fails to help, then he said he would go to the Israel mobile forensics firm who reportedly helped the FBI crack the San Bernardino phone. And there's a certain element to
that's iPhone 6. The phone that he's looking at there is an iPhone 6 as well, so that has secure enclave on it.
Yeah.
Assuming he's enabled everything.
But allegedly they can't even do that. But, I mean, I just find it crazy that... You know, if you've got a grieving parent wants into their son's phone, I find that quite harsh. But you're saying, okay, well, that means backdoors for everyone. I don't know that it does.
I'm just wondering if there's a slightly different scenario on that one, though, Ewan, because I think on an iPhone 6, you know, we're talking sort of we're not talking terrorism here. We're talking your normal public user. The chances are they're going to probably have iCloud photo backup switch on. Majority of people do. I think in the San Bernardino case, there's clear evidence there that that Farouk turned the sink off. I think it was in October time, and there was no backups since that point. But I think the chances are in a case like this that the backups are in place, and Apple have already said that they can get information out of the iCloud syncs. It's actually on the physical device themselves that they're not able to. That easily get that information from. So I think in terms of the whole issue in Italy, I think there's probably other methods that Apple could assist with that doesn't go against the position that they've tried to create in terms of the San Bernardino case.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm really torn with this kind of story and stuff. It's something that that doesn't sit comfortably with me necessarily. Doc's still on the phone. And I'm not happy about the fact that an awful lot of stuff has, a lot of slanging been going. I've always said, respect the court process, and no one's done that. So, but I think Apple have come out very badly from it, and I think they will continue to look bad until, especially if there is, if the FBI pushes a statement out and says, yeah, we got into the phone pretty easily, 30 minutes we were in. Apple again.
Sorry, gang, family emergency, I'm back.
That's all right, mate. We were talking Apple FBI. I don't know if you've been listening to any of that. We were saying that there's a formal drop of the case, Doc, and then we kind of digressed onto this father asking Tim Cook to unblock his son's iPhone.
the whole case was just screwy to me, and all it really proves to me, if anything, is the way U.S. political system loves to play things out in the media if they think it's going to help their case. If they think it's going to hurt their case, they'll do everything in their power to hide it from it, hence the Snowden stuff, And like I always said at the beginning, all the legal stuff aside, it was really about those guys have proven over and over and over again they can't be trusted with a certain amount of power. So that's all I was ever really afraid of, and I think that's the general sentiment around. And, yeah, I can voice Cleveland. That's funny. I can voice all kind of stuff. I can voice Cleveland in 5 languages. So there.
Ewan's gone to the little boy's room.
Oh my God.
I think the point, Doc, that Ewan was talking about on this one, in terms of the father opening his son's iPhone, I think the scenario on this one, I don't know if you've seen the story yet, it's in Perugia, Italy. And a father lost his son to bone cancer back in 2013. The son had given his father the phone and let him put his thumbprints in, but for some reason the thumbprint's now not working. And the father wants, essentially wants just photos off the phone. So my point that I was talking about a minute ago was that surely that means you don't necessarily need to crack the phone, assuming that there's some iCloud photos backups into the cloud there, in which case all Apple need to do, as they did in the San Bernardino case, is investigate the contents of the iCloud backups and see what photos can take from that. They don't necessarily need access to the phone.
Roger that. Okay, so here's something that is more of a tip than anything else. I have a lawyer. I have two lawyers. One is my business lawyer and one is a criminal defense lawyer. And I've never done any crimes, but he's one of my best friends and he's super good at what he does. So I had to give him, the $5. He's just automatically my dude, right? And so for both of them have a envelope. And in that envelope is a sheet that I send them once every 6 months to replace the old one with the new one. It has basically a printout of 1 password, right? And they have the master password. And they're never going to see my computer. It's in a sealed envelope. They don't even open it. But if I should come to my demise, they know from my social accounts and from things I've said, these are the people you give this envelope to so that they can get all of the affairs straightened out. And if you haven't, you don't have one of those. You should.
That's going to help with the thumbprint. It would help if you had the code, I admit, but it's not going to help with the thumbprint. And the thing is, as well, if this phone's been off for more than 2 days, he's got to put a phone print. He's got to put the code in anyway.
Yep.
So the thumbprint won't open it.
Yeah. So
that's why the thumbprint doesn't work anymore. I'm guessing.
Well, what's going to happen? In the more and more biometrics we get, this is probably then one of the things that has helped slow down biometrics is this concern of what are we going to do when you cannot. But this is purely speculation, but I'm sure there's a way that they can generate enough electricity and body heat to actually put it on the real thumb and unlock it.
No, but it won't open it because the thing is after 48 hours, it demands the code, not the thumbprint.
Oh, yeah. Okay. This is true.
And what you've just described sounds grotesque in the extreme, man. I mean, Christ.
Totally. I
may even edit that. Jesus.
Requires mission critical.
Barclays, Apple Pay, terms and conditions have been released, and they went, oh, sorry, no, it's not coming yet. And still? I couldn't give a shit.
I swear you've been telling me this for like since the watch came out last May.
Barkley, you bunch of wankers.
I cannot see how Barclays can be taking so long to get this out there.
Because they're a bunch of wankers. I'm sorry, I've got to the root of the problem right there.
There's got to be something fundamentally wrong in their infrastructure if they cannot roll anything like this. And I believe Barclays have already turned around and said that they're not even going to go anywhere near Android Pay.
I don't want to out anyone here or say anything wrong, but I know someone who does subcontract work for Barclays doing something that I can't mention because that will tie them up straight away. But when they get a request from Barclays to fulfil this thing, nearly always it's just loopy. The requests are like, that's not physically possible. That can't happen. Are you on the same planet? And it's down at their Canary Wharf headquarters. And it's just like, what on earth? And they pull it out constantly over the requests from Barclays. So it doesn't surprise me that they can't even bank.
Pardon?
I've been with them for 25 years and I've worked out they can't fucking bank. Moving on. Apple launches Safari Technology Preview Browser for web developers. Now, I'm gutted that Adam's not on this evening. I hope his missus is all right, by the way. She's hurt her knee. And he had to take it to the ER. But Apple today launched Safari Technology Preview, a new version of its web browser aimed specifically at developers. It's aimed at giving developers a way to access new web technologies, and Apple is planning to implement it in iOS and OS 10, offering an early look to new developer tools, layout technologies, and visual effects, and more. Is this going to make a big difference to any developers' lives?
I think so.
In what way, then?
In front-end development space, even the latest updates to Safari with the responsive design mode, the web inspector, error console, and all of that stuff, was trying to basically get to where Firefox had Firebug. And they brought a large portion of it into play. The code and auto-reload thing is still a little bit buggy, but I can totally see where it happens, especially for the guys that are converting sort of WebKit-oriented things and making it work with iOS devices and the like as well. So I can see where this would come in handy. And Safari kind of does need a little bit of a kick in the pants right now.
But then one of the things that's cool in this, I think, is they're talking about the fact that the technology preview can run side-by-side with the browser. So you can see both activities at the same time.
That's brilliant. That's what I meant by active reload. So there we go. The one thing that I feel is kind of missing is coming back. That's awesome.
I didn't know much about that story. We were hoping Adam would say more because we might do that story again next week, actually, just to get Adam's view on it because he's the one that really would know an awful lot more about it. I'm just going to switch over to the webcam here and watch Paul because he's brought this thing with him that he's using at the moment. He can't see it because the lights are on. Well, switch the lights off. What Paul has got is a projector, but the projector is interactive with the wall. So Paul is actually now drawing on my wall with a stylus, and the projector is picking it up and relaying it to the computer, and the computer is now drawing what Paul is drawing on the wall, effectively.
Sort of.
On the picture, kind of.
Shut the front door.
I mean, Paul can tell you more, but if he grabs a mic while he's sketching, I was going to say AK Rolf Harris then, but that's really not anymore,
that's
is
slightly
it?
Slightly out of fashion.
Can you guess what it is yet?
Yeah. No.
You're not going to be on screen, so just carry on drawing and talking at the same time. We should have enough cable there.
Okay, so basically, I hate to say it's an Android tablet, but basically it's a projector, Pico projector. It's a Pico projector with Android built in, and it spits out a laser. So anything you project onto becomes a touchscreen.
So you can plug your iPad into this thing as well.
Yeah, it's got an HDMI in as well. Yeah. So you can plug into it and it becomes like a standard normal projector. And it is just fabulous. So at the moment, because I've been using it all day, it's completely drained the battery. It's probably okay now, actually. But you can go out. It's 80 lumens. So it's 80 lumens without charge, 50 with. 80 lumens with charge. 50 without charge.
Yeah.
And it's just a fabulous thing to draw on. So in universities and colleges and schools, we've got every classroom, or most classrooms, got these things called interactive whiteboards, which cost a fair amount. And they're brilliant to draw on. They're lovely things. They're, you know, like 50-inch iPads or, you know, touchscreens, for better or worse. But they're about 5 to 8K. And you've got to get them installed into walls that can take the weight, and you've got to change the bulbs every year and stuff like that.
Oh, right, okay.
This is 500 quid.
And it's is that the Touch Pico?
It's going to last longer.
Is it the Touch Pico, Doc says?
Uh-huh.
Is it the Touch Pico?
It's not. It's called TouchJet.
Yeah, the same thing.
TouchJet, yeah.
Yep. So TouchJet Pond. And it's just so much fun.
It looks responsive as well, which is quite interesting. I mean,
well, that's the thing. I mean, ArtRage, I'm going to swap over onto it in a minute, but ArtRage is a fairly meaty application. So it mimics oil paint. It mimics various types of paints. So I'll be drawing with paint, and you can draw a paint with a couple of colours of paint and then smudge them together, and the colours merge and smudge, but it also gives you the rivers and the eddies of the paint as well, and sort of like the tactility of it. It's the most tactile art application that you can get on a touchscreen.
We're going to try and do a better job of projecting this in the big show if we can. We'll get a new cable on the projector. Well,
I'll sling a link at Muller later of me drawing on it today.
And we'll stick it on.
But if you have a look at TouchJet UK on Twitter, they dumped out a couple of videos, or we put out a couple of videos today. Yeah. But the nicest thing was we had a couple of kids come over, and you know, I was drawing on it, but every so often saying, look, do you want to have a go? And they were going, yeah, okay, fine. And the nice thing about it was you give it to an adult and they go, ooh, you know, this is a big touchscreen, I don't know what to do. The kids immediately go, right, okay, what do I do? And
just an iPad.
Way in there, and that's their generation.
Brilliant. There you go. So that's what Paul's doing. That is what Paul's doing at the moment while we speak. And we'll come back to the picture when it's it's all fine. Whoa. Put the lights back on.
It's like 270 grams. It's like, holy crap, that's tiny.
It's a little tiny. If Muller goes up and just shows the unit here on the screen.
It's 100 millimeters by 115 millimeters by 28 millimeters.
So that's the Manfrotto 504 video tripod head.
And that's
a can of Guinness. An empty can of Guinness.
No, it's full.
It's full. A full can of Guinness.
Thank you very much.
Double parked. So that's the size of it. It is tiny. Absolutely tiny.
Pocket-sized.
And it's I've got to say, I'm really impressed with how bright it is. It's not bad at all.
But you can plug your kicker.
Yeah, go on then.
It's on Prime.
Oh, shut up. You put a link in the chat room, you're never coming on the show again.
What?
No, you git. That's a .com link. It doesn't matter. They won't post to me.
Oh, my God. That is so crazy. Oh, my. I hate you. Don't show me this kind of stuff.
Well, this is going to be Paul's cool thing on the show, I think, pretty much.
Oh,
this podcast, Neil, is brought to you by UK2. We love them. They're absolutely awesome. There's an interesting thing, you know. There's a couple of people who have tweeted out this week saying, oh, another UK2 domain, or another domain that I've bought, and I've bought it through UK2, thanks to our British Tech as well. And I was talking to some people about sponsorship, and they were saying, oh, podcasting's, you know, not great for sponsorship, is it? You know, companies don't recognise it. And I said, well, talk to UK2 because they have sponsored us for getting on for 8 years now. And they're in for at least another year because they've renewed all the servers with us. And the servers that we've got with them cost us 400 quid a month. And they're just brilliant. And I said to them, I think the problem that you've got is if you've got your companies that turn up and they give you an offer code, you know, go to xx.com/BTN. And they're like, you know, if you give us any business, then we might give you a bit of cash back. But if you don't, then you can piss off. And that's not the way that UK2 work. UK2 recognised that BTN was an up-and-coming thing that was growing and that was something they wanted to be part of, and they've backed us for 8 years regardless. And I promise you, for the first couple of years, we gave them virtually nothing in comparison to what they gave us. But they have stuck with us, and we have stuck with them, and that's the way it's always going to be. As long as they want us to be a devotee of theirs, then they'll be a sponsor of ours, plain and simple, because they looked after us when no one else would. Plain and simple. And now they say they're really happy because the BTNers out there really look after UK2, and that's the bloody way it should be with advertisers. Anyone who turns up, gives you a couple of quid and then goes, nah, we haven't got anything, we'll sod off straight away. Those aren't the kind of people that you want. UK2 have stuck with us for 8 years, and I am proud that BTN is supported by UK2, and I'm proud to say that all the websites that I've ever bought, I've bought through UK2. And you should do the same, because they really do care about British Tech Network. If you're a listener to this show and you value the services that we provide free of charge, then the least you can do is go to our sponsors and say thanks very much. So send out a tweet now. Write whatever you're doing. Just say, hey Siri or whatever, and send out a tweet that says thanks to UK2 for supporting BTN. Or send them an email to the sales team and say thanks very much. Or buy a domain from them, domain, co-hosting services, those kind of things, VPS, VPN, all of those kind of things. You can get them from UK2. And it doesn't matter whether you're in the States, whether you're in India, whether you're in the UK, the Philippines, you can still buy from UK2. They're the international currency as well. There's no problem at all. And you can pay through PayPal. And also look after 100tb.com, because if you want a server and you're in the States, then 100tb.com can provide you with a fabulous server that starts at $139 a month. And it's the one that we do the NQL feed from, which never falls over, always looks brilliant. And, we've got a lot of data with them, with UK2 and 100tb, and they're just awesome. So please, please look after them. And the other people to talk to are Hoya, because Hoya have started sponsoring us, which is great. I got some glasses from Hoya. I'm wearing them this evening. Here we go. These are specifically made, and the focal length from them is to the camera and then down to my keyboard. That's it. They're very focal based on that length only, nothing else. And Hoya gave me these as a review unit because I had to have a prescription pair because I've got a prescription. But, I loved them. I absolutely adore them. And I still adore them and think they're brilliant. Mark sent us some images last week. I don't think we're as exclusive this week as we were last week. But these are their new frames. They're called the top loader. So if you want the kind of Reggie Cray look where it's... a rim over the top and then just this thing hanging down that looks invisible, that's the look that you want. And it is awesome. It just fits on the same kind of bracket as the glasses that I've got, but it's only secured at the top. They look absolutely incredible. I haven't seen a pair of these in the flesh, but Mark sent me a couple of pictures through, which I'm showing you here. And it's a sexy looking pair of glasses. They are awesome. They are not the cheapest glasses, but if you send an email to podcasts@hoya.co.uk or podcast@hoya.uk, then Mark will arrange for you to get fitted, and he'll do the whole iPad fitting thing like they did with me in the studio and they did with Muller at the factory. And you can have a pair of these glasses that are custom made for you, custom fitted, custom angled, and they'll put whatever lens you want in them. You want something that'll react, that's fine. If you want something that's polarized, they'll do that, and they're just brilliant. They're absolutely awesome. Check them out. Write to podcast@hoya.co.uk. And if you're having trouble getting through on that and you're saying, I haven't had a reply from them, just cc britishtechnetwork@gmail.com and we'll chase Mark up for it. But he'll arrange for a technician to be there when you get your pair fitted, because all BTNers get special treatment from Hoya. Right, time for the cool thing. Mr. Christian Campion, what have you got for us, sir?
So, Michael, Jeffrey Boycott.
There's nothing else, there never will be. Go on.
I'm going to take Michael back to where we started the show with retro games. So, this is not a new game on iOS, Sonic the Hedgehog. It's been out for quite a while on £2.29 in the UK App Store. I think it's £2.99 in the US App Store. But the reason I've picked it is because it's now available on the Apple TV 4th Gen. And I've been playing this week. I've round up my sister's during the week playing on the Apple TV with my nephew. And realised that Sonic was available. So we got it. We dropped it down onto the Apple TV. He'd never played Sonic the Hedgehog before. Seen it. Yep, 9 years old. He'd never
disown him.
He is never off it now. It's actually to the point. Up to now, I'd not bought the Apple TV 4th Gen. It should be delivered tomorrow because of Sonic the Hedgehog to be able to play it on there.
I've got it, and I'm going to go home and buy it and not go to bed before 5 a.m. now, thanks to you.
That was really one of my favourite games.
And it causes them a late night or a wasted weekend playing Sonic. But it's a great pick. I've had it, like I said, I've been playing it on my phone for a while, on and off. As soon as I saw it available on Apple TV. Awesome.
Excellent, mate. Good pick. Really like that. What was the price again?
£2.29 in the UK. I think it's £2.99 in the US.
Cheap at a third of the price. Doc, what's your cool thing?
Okay. Good. Two simple ones. The first one is a reminder. Tomorrow is actually a lie. Today. Today is World Backup Day. If you haven't...
Oh, you're kidding me.
Get on it. Bro, it's important. I tell you, I do a lot of data recovery, and I'm always like, I can't believe all of the people that follow me, and I'm always bitching about it online, and yet you still call me and ask me, can I recover your data because you don't have it backed up. It's just insane. Just back it up. It's not that hard. If you know what you're doing, go find World Backup Day to teach you. Anyway.
Okay. But you should back up. That's Doc is quite right there. Oh, what have you bought? The nylon strap. You fanboy.
It's so comfortable. It's different. I thought it would be like soft and flimsy, but it's not. It's soft and sturdy. And it's really cool. And I'm not gonna lie, for 1 second, I'm like, I'm really gonna give these guys $40 for a recycled belt.
Ah, we've lost your audio completely.
Yeah.
See, it's not just me.
No, it's not. That squeals.
I've got a high pitched squeal in my ears, and all the listeners have now turned off. I'm gonna edit this bit. And actually, for once, I will edit it.
Yeah, that's high pitched, is that?
Hello, Doc. Were you running on battery or something there, mate?
No. It's what the hell?
It is you. It's not me.
Yeah, but what happened?
Everything went quiet all of a sudden, and then we had a high-pitched squeal in our ears that deafened us, and we'll sue you. There'll be a class action.
You can hear me now, right?
Yeah, we got you now. Go for it, mate. Carry on.
But yeah, anyway, I thought it would be like, it was really hard to give them this amount of money for this, and I'm still in the area where I could take it back, but it's so comfortable. I like it, and it feels better than any of the bands that I've had so far, and I've been through like 6 bands, and it's built nice. I don't know if I'll buy more than one because it is kind of expensive for nylon. But it's worth it. At least go try one on and see if you like it, because it makes the watch look better, and it's really, really, really nice.
My take on them, I've not got an Apple Watch myself, Doc. My take on them is, it's a smart looking strap. So if you want something a little bit smarter than the normal sort of sport band strap, but you don't want to go into the realms of spending $150+, it's a good alternative.
Mm.
Unless you go to grey market, unless you go to the replica market.
Excellent. No, I like that. It's good. I got an email from someone saying that they sent me Click bands and they'd be here soon, but I've had nothing. I think it must have been a spamming, scamming thing. So we shall see. I've got a really cool thing.
Was it from 716.com?
I'll have to look on the email and check to find out, but
that's the real Click guy, 716.com with no vowels.
Right, and that's the wrong spammy type. Don't do it. Right, okay. My cool thing is actually really, really, really cool. And I got this sent to me as a review copy, and they said, would you mind looking at our new application? Yeah, okay, that's fine. So they sent it me in the iStore, and I kind of like, yeah. And it was to do with to-do lists. What's your view on to-do lists, chap?
To-doists?
Yeah, do you use them, and do you actually use them, or do you just do them and then forget to do them properly?
No. This right here, like, I'll forget to scratch my balls without this.
Yeah, no, see, I'm crap with to-do lists. I'm bloody awful. But since I got this app, I actually use it, and I actually do the things that I'm supposed to properly. It works for me. I don't know why it works for me. And I think it might be because it's a visual to-do list. And it's called Nine App, and it's available on the iOS store. Mm. It's N-I-N-E. Just put N-I-N-E app iOS, and you'll get it. It's 79 pence, so I'm guessing that's 99 cents in the US. And it's a to-do list. It's a reminder, shopping listy type thing, whatever. And all you have to do is take a series of pictures that you want to use, and then you can reuse them constantly in your to-do list. So you can take a picture of eggs and then import the picture of eggs. And instead of looking at the words, and this may be a dyslexic thing because I don't respond well to the written word, you take a picture of the thing that you need to do, and then it lets you type over the top what you need to do with that thing. So it could be a to-do list, it could be a reminder, it could be a routine of places to go, and you've got pictures of those places to go, so you put them in the order that you need to go to, if you're a delivery driver or something like that. But if you want to add something, you just click add, and it comes in, and it you can shuffle through them, and they change their size holistically so that they fill the screen. And there it is. It's a visual to-do list, and I've got to say, I was kind of looking at it thinking, okay, fair enough, maybe, maybe not. And now I've used it for a couple of weeks. I'm a devotee. I absolutely adore it. You start taking pictures of stuff that you do regularly and storing those in your photo file, then all you've got to do is put these things in. And because it's visual, I think I just respond to it better being dyslexic. I don't know. But it's brilliant. I really love it.
I give that a go.
This is actually cool.
It is. It is really cool. That's the thing, is you look at it. If you're listening on audio now, I guarantee you're sitting there going, gimmick. No, don't get that at all. I promise you, download it and have a go, and it works. For some reason, it's just right. It just feels the right thing to do. I don't know why. I poo-pooed it when they first sent it through as a trial. But I'm addicted to it now, and I love it. I absolutely adore it. And it's like, if you think of doing something, you know that time when you think, oh, I've got to do this, and then do that, and then do the other, and then I can come and do this. And you stood at the thing, the last thing that you want to do, but you know you've got to do the other three things first. If you take a picture of the last thing you've got to do and stick it in this to-do list, you don't go away, do the other three things and go, oh, what's the other thing I've got to do? Because it's right there as a picture, because you were stood in front of them. There's no end of times that I will sit and I'm like, I know I've got to do this, but I've got to do other things first. I'll come back to this, and I don't ever end up coming back to it because your priority gets all screwed up and that kind of stuff. This thing doesn't solve it. It solves all that problem. It's really good.
I think one of the things I love about this app is there's loads of to-do apps out there. There's
tons.
There's reminders within iOS. There's loads of places where people can do lists. The developer here has thought about it. It's thought about how can I make a to-do list app that's a little bit different. It's gonna appeal to people differently, and let's give it a go. And I admire that.
Yeah.
You know what's funny is to this day, my dad, he'll be sitting down with me and we'll be talking about stuff. I show him a video on YouTube. And he'll take a picture of my screen, and I'm like, Dad, I can text you the YouTube link. He goes, yeah, I forget to press it. But if I see it in my picture thing, I'll remember to go and look for that video, and then I'll go back to your text. And I'm like, what? And so I'm going to just install this on my dad's phone, and, he's probably going to love it. And he's kind of Esau, English as a second language. So even better, because pictures work no matter whether you speak Korean or English.
Yeah. But I think the thing that can be frustrating is if you think, oh, I've got something to do, and you're not stood at that thing, and you've got to find a picture for it. But there's times I've been like, oh, I've got to go and do something, and I'll take a picture of something which is completely unrelated to that thing. But because I've taken that picture, it's like tying a knot in your hanky. Because when you look back, you look at that picture and you go, why on earth did I take a picture of that? Oh, yeah, I remember. And it's really weird how it does that. And I've done that a couple of times. And as soon as I did it, I thought to myself, that's tying a knot in your hanky. It's just take a picture of anything. It doesn't matter what you've taken a picture of, because it's a unique picture. Your brain remembers it and logs it to that event, even if it's not associated. I've just become addicted to it. I think it's brilliant. I think it's a really great idea. I got mine free because it was a review unit. But but I love it. I absolutely adore it.
Beautiful. Good pick, dude.
Thanks, man. And Paul.
Hello.
How's the drawing coming?
That's good, all right. Yeah.
Are we gonna do lights out again, Muller?
Yeah, okay.
We'll get the camera set up better for the big show. But here we go. The drawing's going on.
It's the undisputed star of BTN.
Oh, what's all the beer references for? You make us out to be a bunch of pissheads.
You're in the way of the camera.
No, sorry.
So there we go. That's Paul's drawing. You need to lift it up if you can a little bit, mate. Just higher.
There we go.
And it's that's Paul's drawing. We're going to sort it out. We've got an extension lead here, but we need to unplug the camera, which we can't do middle of the show. So
Ewan,
before the big show.
Will that come out if Muller takes a picture on his phone closer and maybe switches it in his back room or tweets it?
Yeah, we will do. We'll sort out the pictures, but at the moment I haven't got...
in Slack, and I've sent you them on iCloud share.
Chris, this is a tech show, and you want me to take a picture of the phone. When this drawing is ending up on a pad somewhere, then you can take a screenshot of the pad and send it.
The key is that Paul's drawing it. We'll sort it out for the big show. We'll work it out.
I'll send you some photographs.
Lights back on. Cool. Where can we get a hold of you, Chris Campion?
I'm Campion UK on Twitter. Generally on the big show, occasionally on the Mac show, and normally around the Slack room.
Excellent. Thank you very much. Doc, where are you, sir?
Somewhere being the opposite of my grayscale twin, Chris, on the BTN a couple of times a week, and all over the Indian internet as DOCROCK.
Good having you, mate. Thanks for coming along.
Thanks, bro.
Paul, where are you, sir? He's rushing to find the mic and get in front of the camera.
Sorry, you can find me at kercal.co.uk, kercal.co.uk.
And you're at Kirkal on Twitter, aren't you?
I am, that as well. That my things. Although, for the next 3 days, you can find me on stand B41 at the Gadget Show Live at the Birmingham NEC.
There you go. If you're going to Gadget Show... Yeah, go Gadget Show Live, go to stand B41 and check out Paul and tell him you're a BTN listener, because he'd love to say hello to you. Yep. And I've got to say, some of the artwork that his kids does and he does on the show, he's on the show floor, is absolutely brilliant. I've been to the Eurogamer a couple of times and seen him there and Gadget Show, and it's well worth looking at, well worth looking at. All done on digital artwork stuff. No paper is wasted. No trees are killed.
No trees harmed.
During his demonstrations. My name's Ewan Rankin. Get me at Ewan Rankin on Twitter. We'll be back again next Thursday as normal with the big show and the Mac show as planned. Nothing will change apart from the fact that we'll have different people in, maybe. Or a few of the same. Who knows? Mm. Muller will be here. At least he didn't say we'll be drunk. See you next week. Thanks for listening.